for you. Welcome to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. This is where songwriters find inspiration every time. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Inside Songwriting Podcast. My name's Carl Brody. I'm the author of The Free Thinking Songwriter and general thought sharer of all things songwriting. I'm happy to be here with you today. I've got a great interview that I'm about to dive right into, and I'm sure you'll get so much from this. I was lucky enough to go and talk to Golden Guitar winner and brilliant songwriter Luke O'Shea. Now, if you're anything like me, you'll want to listen to this one again and again, because he says so many important things, and he comes up with some great little insights and tips that you'll definitely want to take with you beyond this interview. So I'm going to go straight in there. Enough of my talking. I do enough of that in the interview as well. Here goes. Here's the interview with Luke O'Shea. Okay, friends, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. I'm looking at the trophies now. 3 times Golden Guitar winner and one of the most wonderful storytelling songwriters I know. Please welcome to the show, Ding, Luke O'Shea.
In the red corner. Hello, folks, how are you?
It's great to have you on the show. I've been wanting to catch up with you for a chat about your craft and about all things Luke O'Shea for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I know that the listeners to the show are going to get a lot of value of what you can share. So first of all, I've got to say a hearty, hearty congratulations on your Golden Guitar win a couple of weeks ago now. It's time's going fast, isn't it? It was about 3 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
Mate, I was so proud of you. I was in the front row. They gave me false hopes by sitting me in the front row. And when your name was read out for both categories that you won, I was really emotional and really proud of you. And
thanks, mate.
Congratulations. And I've got to say, when you stood up for the first one, you looked bewildered. Your whole body kind of flopped like a rag doll, and then you walked up to the stage and you accepted with such grace and eloquence, and it was a really good speaker. It was beautifully accepted.
Thanks, mate. Well, it wasn't about me, that's why. You know, to have the award presented by Joy McKean, who, ladies and gentlemen, the whole song was about, Lady of the Land, the wife of Slim Dusty, who is an Australian icon over here and also paramount in the establishment of our whole country music industry, you know.
That's right.
But it was the 10 years since his passing, and there's a bit of fanfare about Slim, obviously, with that. But bottom line is, there would have been no legacy and no Slim Dusty without Joy McKean behind him. That's fact. You know, she was a superstar before he even came down from the bush with her sister, you know, running a radio show, Melody Trail. That was the highest rating show every Saturday night for 11 years.
See, that's incredible. These are the things I'm learning. We had to talk off air before about the performance when you had the visuals playing behind you, and I learned more about the song from watching that watching you play. But I'm getting an education as well, because, I mean, I know Joy personally, and she's lovely, and we hug when we see each other. Yeah. But I've got a lot to learn about her history.
She's so humble. So humble. And it was only through reading her book, Been There and Back Again, that I just went, I've got to sing this woman up. You know, I really do, you know. And when you do something like that with such a, you know, a respected and iconic lady, and because she is known as the lady, you know, the grand lady, yeah, and of country music. And I want to take it that little bit further, because the amount of times they've crisscrossed this country and gone places no other performer had, you know, been since, almost, but, you know, had gone before, definitely, you know. Yeah. To regional and remote Australia, and just constantly on that road singing up the country and the people. And
it's a far-fetched concept to a lot of the artists that are
the size and, well right now. The size and scope of Australia still this day is just, it's massive, and the population is tiny. And the state of the roads back in those days,
that's right,
would have been, you know, horrific. Bull dust everywhere, no air conditioning in that cars, you know, and, you know, no big graders coming through over those interrogations, you know. So
my first trip around Australia was in 93, and there was a lot of dust flying around. There was a lot of getting off the road for the road trains.
Yeah, yeah, man. It's hardcore now, but back in those days, you know, 40 years ago, yeah, it was frontier touring. And so...
And not a four-wheel drive vehicle in sight.
No, absolutely not. And so, you know, for Joy McKean, you know, to put her whole career behind her man, and then she became the multi-instrumentalist in his band, played electric bass, piano, accordion, and guitar, but also sang harmonies, and then writing some of his biggest hits of all, you know, The Lights on the Hill, Indian Pacific, etc.
You know, do you think there are many stories out there with where your beloved spouse is so that involved in your career?
I don't know. Like,
it's just beautiful.
It's amazing. You know, they were a team. You know, they were a legacy, but it is still just the Slim Dusty Center and the Slim Dusty name that she drives.
Yeah.
It's not her own, you know, and that's what I just wanted to make note of, you know, like besides doing all that, she had his kids and she had make sure Dylan was on the table, coordinated the band, you know, so a remarkable, remarkable woman. And the fact that she was on that stage
and that's what I was going to ask
presenting the award.
Amazing.
You know, that's when you kind of go, well, and it was a surreal moment because it's as good as it gets. You know, the fact is it wasn't about me, that song. The song was Joy's life. In her own words, using back at her, you know, that was the craft of the song, was selecting the lines and the titles of her songs, using the words from her book to tell her story within a, you know, 3.5 minute song, you know. So,
and not only that, having the opportunity pretty soon after you've written and recorded it to play it to the woman herself.
That's right.
And then having her standing right next to you on stage.
Yeah.
When you accept an award for the song.
You know, and I'm so...
I can't imagine how you were feeling.
Well, man, I was proud, you know. I don't know. It was a job done, you know, because a lot of people, you know, it's normally only when they're dead.
Yeah.
That you get to say that to people.
That's, yeah, that's the that was the beautiful thing about her being there.
Yeah.
And I wonder in her words how she felt about that moment.
She sent me a lovely email afterwards, and I'd sent her the footage. Someone, a good friend of ours, Billy, he videotaped the whole thing, and so you can see the reaction on her face, you know, when she heard that the song had won the guitar. So she was tickled pink, but she sent me a lovely email. It was still very modest. She said, you know, with the unveiling of the bus that happened up at of her and Slim on up in Tamworth, this festival, and also with the success of the Lady of the Land, the song, she says she was at severe danger of getting a swollen head. So still very, very modest and still with a great sense of humour, but just royalty, absolutely Australian royalty, and very, very special moment that she was there, you know, to present that award, which, you know... You know, it was very, very special to me.
Yeah, well, you should. I mean, I know you are, and you should be very, very proud of achieving something like that, even in a small way. That was in a massive way.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
With the song, which is just a beautiful melody, it's so well crafted in so many ways, so many details to that song. It's a great approach to reading a book and piecing together important moments that obviously struck a match in you. What's the strongest sentiment that you wanted to get through in that song when you're crafting it?
Well, the title of the book was, you know, and for your listeners, whenever I got, you know, lacked inspiration, I would often go into a bookshop and read the titles, because, you know, titles say a lot in a few words.
It's better than looking at the names of racehorses.
Natural. Well, that could work, too.
I've tried that and failed many times.
So, you know, I just kind of pot around in a bookshop. But after reading Joy's book, Been There and Back Again, that became, you know, the hook phrase in the chorus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the lady of the land. I've been there and back again, you know, and it sets up the story. Okay, been down some long and winding roads, but with him, I was always home. You know, I deliberately kept the name Slim out of it until the very last
chorus,
you know.
You're such a thoughtful craftsman. You really are. And I love how you're definitely an historian in many ways, but I love that you can apply that. You can apply that to someone's story in country music, in Australian country music.
Well, I think, I don't know, I think...
You do your research, don't you, with your songs?
Well, I think, yeah. Oh, thanks, mate. I'll take the compliment. But I'll just go, I don't know. I think we need to make it, as a songwriter, you can write something that which is highly, highly personal or highly specific about one person in particular, but you can make it generic in a way which will appeal to a wide variety of people. Like, at no stage do I mention Joy McKean in that song. You know, I don't mention her name once, but the only time that you will figure it out is if you are familiar with her body of work. And in the last chorus, with Slim, I was always home. So it's quite interesting to know that people automatically know it's about Joy McKean, but at no stage was it referring to her directly. And only with the mention of one word, Slim, that it all should fall into place. And that's what was very satisfying, as we were talking earlier, about having the video being played behind me on that main stage there whilst we were performing the song, and how it became, you know...
The visuals could tell the story.
Yeah, how you were learning, oh, that makes sense. And so the listener could actually understand the craft behind it then, because there were lines in the song, you know, like I met up with a fella who was wild and free, the twisted branch, a twisted branch on the family tree, obviously making reference to the song that Joy McKean wrote, which was one of Slim's biggest songs, you know, the biggest disappointment. Right. You know, the biggest disappointment in the world was me, the only twisted branch upon that good old family tree. And, you know, and
that's fantastic.
So you drop these lines in there, which, you know, which are fairly cryptic to the person who doesn't know Joy's history or Joy's discography, you know. Or,
well, to me, I mean, I've toured with her daughter, with Anne, and they're just wonderful people. But like I say, I'm getting an education. And I think that taking that approach as a songwriter, that kind of craftsmanship, maybe even without knowing it, all the while, and even you mentioning that you don't drop in Slim's name till the end, there's tension there. And I think the listener will be thinking that throughout the whole song, it's such a beautiful song about, you know, this wonderful woman, and, you know, they'll be feeling all that all the while, and then when they discover who it's about, they're not going to be disappointed, obviously. Yeah, it's a great craft, and I like when I hear interesting approaches to it like that.
Yeah, well, I think the structure is a little bit different as well to people what are used to. Like, I don't know if you're aware of the great song Hurt that was written by Trent Reznor but performed by Johnny Cash, one of his last singles.
I heard some.
But in the video of that song, which I find such a powerful vehicle for the song, there is a moment where it is builds up, ding, ding. You know, a single note just rings out, and throughout that, there's these images of Johnny Cash and June just flashing over the screen.
That's right. It's been a while since I've seen it.
And it's powerful. Like, it's very powerful. And Slim and Joy are our June and Johnny to a large degree.
That was who I thought of immediately when I asked you that question earlier on about there being another team.
That's right, sure, in Australia, definitely. And so with that, there was a moment in that song which was I wanted to gain that sense of movement and evolution. And so with that, you know, around and around and around we go, singing to the people, sitting in the front row, which is one of the titles of the songs. But, like, you know, you just kept going round and round and round, and we go round and round and round and round and round, you know, and we build up that momentum, and the drums come in and the notes sing and the resonating one note on the piano. It crescendoed into this kind of moment. So you're taken on this very spacious journey, then all of a sudden you're picked up and taken along the road and wheeled around, and then, you know, we're thrown out again at the other side of it. So it's...
The dynamics. It's just
Dynamic plays an integral part in songwriting, you know. It's like a story, you know. Like, if you're going to see a movie, you know, you have your, you know,
you don't want your the setting. Plot.
Yeah, you want your plot, you want your complication, you want your resolution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
And you don't want either of them too soon.
No.
You spoil the moment.
Well, you want, if you're a storyteller, you want to tell a good story.
Yeah, which is what you do very well, my friend.
Yeah,
going back to, there's obviously, you've found enough charm in Joy McKean's story and in her lyrics to include those components in your song, which is pretty interesting because you're sort of those songs live on through your song, and you're extending the life of those in some ways but in a different way. What is it about someone like Joy McKean's songwriting? What is that charm?
In particular, Joy McKean's writing, it doesn't underestimate the intelligence of their listener.
Fantastic, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you look at her songs, and even some of the chord combinations, you know, they are really clever, and they know that their listener is listening, or their audience is listening. They know that these people are deconstructing their lyrics and absorbing the story. And I really do...
Such a great way to look at it.
...feel in modern day music, we underestimate the intelligence of our audience and say we make it too easy. We make it too accessible. We give them songs about, particularly in country, working hard, let's go get pissed, you know. Praise the Lord that we can get pissed.
A lot of it is there's a lot of writing out there that is, you know, we're all probably capable of it at certain times. It's so self-absorbed and there's a lot of ego in there, and for you to phrase it like that about Joy's writing is really interesting, and it's a lovely thought to take on board for any future writing I do, to be honest. I'm learning something here from you.
I always learn.
No, I'm surprised about that. It's great. And I'm fascinated as well because you are one writer that I always appreciate, and so that you tend to find a topic that really is important enough to write a song about. And you always seem to have you delve right into your characters, you delve right into this country's history. You know, you're somewhat of an anthropologist. I'm not wrong in saying that, am I? You seem to have explored the human spirit and...
Thanks, mate. I'll take it. But I've been a school teacher, you know, a history school teacher and a geography school teacher and music, religion school teacher, you know, for the last 21 years, you know, and I've been lucky enough, like yourself, to have seen a lot of the world, you know, in that time. And you do find common threads, you know, within, regardless of the colour of your skin, what religion you are, or, you know, where you happen to reside. There are people love stories, you know, be it sitting in a cave and, you know,
yeah, hitting, they always, you know, have, yeah.
We love a story, and we love being given a story which is going to leave us maybe pondering about it for a little while, you know, be it a parable or be it a, you know, a story about how you went out and killed a mammoth, I don't know. But,
I've done that a few times, but I've never actually written a definitive song about it yet. I'm working on it.
Yeah, no, there's not many left. We're getting quick.
There's still a few in Scotland.
But, you know, so I think, you know, like this next album, you know, really is titled Sing You Up because, I don't know, I'm very proud, and without wanting to sound cliche, but I'm very proud of being Australian, you know, and our people. We're a remarkable race of people on a very big, harsh land. We're doing pretty good, you know, regardless of what you read in the papers and, you know, the doom and gloom everyone wants to portray. But
just to interject there quickly, you know, I've lived here for 15 years now, And obviously I've learned a lot about this country from, I'm lucky enough, I get to travel from town to town. I've done I'm not finished, but I'm a bit of a road warrior in terms of seeing different places. So I learn a lot about Australia just by default. However, there's certain people around that they're interesting enough to me to want to ask them certain things and about Australia and its history and the heritage. And you're one of them through your songs. And just in general conversation, we were at the back earlier on having a coffee. And, you give me more information than I get, certainly from watching the news and so on about this country. And it must be in your nature. You know, it must be in your nature to express yourself with the things you learn along your path.
Well, there's certain things which I think should be integral in all Australians' education. That's understanding what has defined us, you know, especially past events like the Great War. You know, that was a disaster, and we're still...
I can't wait to hear. Folks, before we started recording, Luke was telling me about his new album, and I'm already so intrigued, and I may even be lucky enough to leave here with a copy a few months before the release, but I'm really intrigued, and it sounds like you've got some fascinating topics.
We're about to celebrate, that's the word I want to try and get out of our vocab when we're talking about Anzac Day. We're about to remember and commemorate, you know, the 100th year anniversary of the beginning of the Great War, of World War I. And I don't think there's been a more ineptly named kind of event in human history than the Great War. It was a tragedy. It was a scar on humanity. And, we travel a lot, as we mentioned before, especially throughout Australia. And so many of these towns, you know, there's always in these towns, in pride of place, in the middle of the street, you know, a roll of renown with, you know, names, hundreds of names on these things, and the town's dead, but always on those names you always see brothers' names that have been listed on there, and that's whole families that were decimated, totally wiped out, you know, four, five, you know, three brothers' names. And you just go, each one of those men that did not come back had an integral role within that town. Be they a butcher, baker, candlestick maker, who knows, but they brought something. And there was, Australia's history is not long. It's very, very short, you know, white settlement in Australia anyway. But as we were just blossoming, you know, we were just blooming, you know, these towns were just growing. They were cut. They were pruned too short. And
put everything on hold. We're sending you.
Yeah. And it was, they didn't come back. And each of those towns died. There were no men to marry. There were no one to, you know, the father of these children. And the fact that, you know, even when these men did come back, as many men died within the first 10 years of returning than died over there, you know, through the depression and the alcoholism and the suicides, not being able to deal with what they had experienced over there. And
I can only imagine that in song form, this is going to be really powerful. Am I going to be
it's a punch in the nose.
I have to pull over the car when I'm driving home today.
I've really designed this song to punch people in the nose, because there's going to be a lot of flag waving, there's going to be a lot of cheering, you know, with this 100 years, you know, commemoration of World War One. And I've written this to make sure that people understand that it was a travesty, it was a disaster, and we should remember.
Are there diggers around now who would have lost brothers and friends
from the First World War?
Yeah, are we on the last couple?
They've long, well, not long
Wasn't
gone.
Wasn't the last one maybe a couple of years ago?
Yeah, just passed, but... he was 14 or something when he enlisted, you know, which was crazy.
I was, speaking of the traveling we get to do from town to town, I was really moved. I was in Albury, Wodonga, two or three years ago. And I happened upon an Anzac parade through the main street. And I was watching these old boys marching. Just looking ahead, absolutely uniformed. The timing was exact, not a foot out of place. And it just occurred to me that there's some things that never leave us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That regimented marching, and I also I got to thinking what was going through their minds, you know, their brothers and their mates and their loved ones. And it's really powerful. It's really powerful.
It is, man. Like, it is one of the, it is an event in Australia's history that I really do want people to know the truth about, you know. Yeah. It wasn't glorious to lose 5,500 men in one night, you know, through the incompetence of your leaders and your generals, you know, and British, yeah. Not even our own.
We can't, you know, fathom it, can we?
We cannot comprehend it, you know, yeah. To lose 20,000 men within 7 weeks, you know, yeah. You just go, that is stupidity, yeah. You know, of the highest order. And it wasn't glorious. It was waste.
Yeah, you only hear of that sort of thing, those sort of numbers now through some kind of
that's
hidden
right.
Mass
they certainly weren't reporting that to the people back home then.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, there's that, but I think as a role of a songwriter, particularly in Australia and particularly in country music, the whole album's title is called Sing You Up, you know, deliberately because I really do want to sing up this land. And, mate, look, I know you get it, but the Aboriginal Australians, you know, for 50,000 years have been singing up this country. You know, this whole land has been used to being sung to for 50,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, and they called them song lines that crisscrossed Australia. And the Aboriginal person, when they went walkabout, was on a set quest to sing up the land. And if they didn't, you know, maintain that responsibility, it was thought the land would disappear.
So passing on the message to the nearer.
Yeah, so you see that pile of rocks, you go, hey, pile of rocks, I'm glad you're there. Yeah. All right, we'll catch you on that tree. And then, and it kept the land there for their kids and the future generations. And us now, like those song lines have, you know, largely disappeared due to white settlement, but, yeah, you know, replaced by highways and red dirt roads. But the people who carry on that tradition are the likes of the Balladeers and Slim and, yep. And Youngie and all those people have traversed, and that's why they're so revered by the Indigenous Australians. They really did love those travelling troubadours because they were carrying on that tradition, be it unconsciously or not.
Yep.
And so with the inundation, I feel, of globalisation just through new technology that's come in at such a rapid rate, I really feel it integral that we still continue to sing up Australia and what makes us unique and beautiful because
well, that's, we your are message at risk. Is, your message is going to reach far and wide, and that's one of the technology and the advances can be beastly, but they can be beautiful as well because someone in Alaska can download your music. In a couple of minutes. Well, they will. You're speaking to, for example, one of the most important folk singers ever. Woody Guthrie, he travelled around to 40-odd states learning thousands and thousands of songs from the natives, from the immigrants, mountain songs. And then that gave him the tools to become the songwriter he was. Do you think that your anthropological ways and traveling times have given you the tools to become the songwriter you are?
Absolutely. You know, we all learn through osmosis, being inspired. I think inspiration is the greatest kind of educator. You know, I mean, listening to one of your songs will inspire me to kind of dig a little deeper and go in an area. Listening to Woody Guthrie will also inspire me. You know, like there's so many, you know, to watch, you know, The Boss, you know, on stage and hear some of his songs connect with people. You just go, there's inspiration everywhere. And so it makes you want to strive to become better.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? But also that inspiration in the story, which makes you want to get and share that message. You know, so with Lady of the Land, it was the inspiration of Joy's life that made me want to write that and share it. With The Great War or Three Brothers, it is the inspiration of the frustration and the heartache that I feel.
I can tell talking to you about that song, there's a fire in you where you needed to write that song, and that's really interesting as well. There's some songs we just need to write.
Well, to be totally honest to you and your listeners, man, like I'm an Australian male, so we don't tear up easy, but I was bawling when that third verse came to me. You know, it was in the car as I was driving home from Tamworth through Scone. I saw this massive rolling down in this town trying desperately to grow again. Mm. You know, and it's, you know, the shops are all, you know.
That's the town I was trying to think of. On the left-hand side, there's all these monuments, and it tells you how many died and when.
Yeah.
Oh, and so it gets me every time.
And you just go, I don't know. And the final verse, you know, like, you know, the eldest was a farmer who once loved to laugh and joke, but 3 years on the Western Front, something inside him broke. So much death, the gas, the bombs, few can understand when a soldier, he just lay down his arms and walked into no man's land.
Mm.
Such a waste, Lord. Mm. You know, and it was just, it was a waste.
Mm.
You know, and there was so many broken, wasteful moments in that war and that event, and war in general. And, you know, the tears flowed, mate, unashamedly. Yeah, and even when I recorded, that you'll hear on the vocal track, there is, I cracked.
Mm.
You know, saying, singing that third verse.
Wow.
And it's kept in there because I went, because it hurts.
Mm.
You know, I don't know if it's, I don't buy into the past life stuff, but maybe that's it. Maybe I'm so furious, you know, that I had to get it out. I have to tell that story, you know.
Yeah.
And amongst that, there's a lot of light, the songs, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of joyful songs, and I don't dwell on the heavier subjects, you know. Following that song on the album will be a song about, you know, just taking time to breathe in all the good stuff before you walk into the house, you know, and filling yourself up with love and good stuff. But there are certain songs that you write to punch people in the nose, and there's certain songs that you write just to entertain.
Yeah, and in terms of your body of work, for that song to have the maximum impact, it's probably better that you don't sort of surround it with songs that are just as fiery and meaningful and for your listener as well. I mean, you don't want an intense experience for the listener for the whole album.
No, you can't have it. Like, and there's, I don't know, I'm proud of the balance of this next album, because, you know, like, there's something about singing up the land and the stuff I used to find in my dad's bottom drawer.
Which is just, and that's another reason why I'm fascinated by your writing. You find these things to write about that are so meaningful. And I've got it. I could be speaking out of turn here, but I think there's a large majority of songwriters that don't go to the extent that you go to find something important enough to sit there and craft a song about.
Mm.
And that song, that's a beauty. Tell us about that song.
That's Bottom Drawer. Oh, man, I think most of us are, as kids, really want to find out some information on who these authority figures are in their life, you know, that just say no all the time, you know, and you just go on, hang on.
You're not the boss of me.
Yeah, like, who are you really, you know? And so they say, keep out of my room, and then you go, you know, you turn into a pirate, and you just kind of sneak in their room when they're not home, and then you go through their stuff. And for me, there wasn't much of interest in mum's stuff or stuff that I understood.
I wish I could remember. I know I did it, but I wish I could remember what I found.
Well, I know exactly what I found, Dad's, because, man, there was this Jim Bowie knife in there with a buckhorn handle and this leather scarf with a cougar head stamped on it. And, man, that was like Excalibur.
What was it for?
Killing. Yeah, killing. I don't know, man.
What did he tell you it was for?
I don't know, but Jim Bowie, you know, like, and that was, you know, he was obviously went down in the Alamo, and that cowboys and Indians and all that stuff. And there's this cool stuff in that bottom drawer, man, that I just had to kind of, I still remember, you know.
Mm.
And now that I've got children, you know, sometimes I get home and go, who's been going through my stuff? And they're me, what do you know? But you just know they're finding clues and about who we are, and that's cool.
And I guess as a child, or even as an adult, the imagination of a child, or even the way we consider these things now, when you're going through the contents of a drawer, you just, for each item, or even putting the items together, there's a story, or you can imagine a story. And I remember as a kid back in Edinburgh, we did a lot of stuff that we shouldn't have done on the streets of Edinburgh, my mates and I, my pals, you know. I remember lots of incidents getting, you know, I got damaged quite a lot, falling from walls and...
Being a boy.
And falling victim to the trappings they had laid out so that we couldn't climb those walls and all that kind of thing. They had glass, you know, they had glass in the top of the walls, and then they would put motor grease so that if we did get to the top, we had no grip, we'd slip off. Mm. So they had glass in the concrete at the top of the wall. Shout, you know, things we used to do as kids. And what I remember one in particular, and actually this is how I did get one of my scars on my hand. It's kind of a V-shaped scar on the palm of my hand. You can just wow. see it there. My friends and I, we broke into an old air raid shelter, and no idea how long before us anyone had even been in there. But we bust off the chain and the padlock. This is what kids do in Edinburgh. Yeah. I wasn't unlike most kids.
Right.
Honest. Later, I found BMXing and skate park, and you know, whilst I was, you know, starting my piano lessons and so on, so I came good.
Yes, yeah, in honest. Between the meditation, going to church.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was. I used to march the streets and.
So, what did you find in the bumps?
Well, this is it. We found old tins with torches, you know, and packs of cards.
Wow.
And we used to imagine, you know, sort of biscuit tins and stuff going back to World War II, I guess, maybe World War I. But the most fun for us was the fire extinguishers. Mm. So we broke them off the wall and had carbon monoxide fights.
Right.
And then we got chased. And when I was trying to get out of the yard, I jumped up onto a fence. And obviously, I know this in hindsight, obviously there was a nail there where I put my hand, which my hand got stuck on. And in a couple of attempts to get it off.
Did they catch you?
Yes, they caught us, and one of them called my mother to come get me because my hand was bleeding quite a lot. But I just love how, you know, we can attach stories to objects and items.
Oh, absolutely.
Your song, My Dad's Bottom Drawer, it gives that sort of notion a whole lot more.
Well, the chorus, I think the trick is to add, I deliberately added smell and colour, you know, so like it goes... There are old coins and some cigarette lighters, shotgun shells and the smell of old spice. There was a golden wedding ring, but the coolest thing is still that old Jim Bowie knife. A silver chain with a four-leaf clover, a Sunday missal with the pages torn. In a little black box, there was some ribbons and some medals from a long-forgotten war in my dad's bottom drawer.
There was how you put yourself in the mind of a child, and you know, the coolest thing was the knife.
Ah, it's still the coolest thing.
Yeah,
I think, and then it continues for a second chorus. There were some letters and some black and white photos of my old man in another life. In one, he had his arm around a pretty young thing, not my mother, not his wife. A cherry red pipe and
is that
a tiny
true story.
Oh, absolutely. He had a picture of his old girlfriend in there. But
I know your folks. I know they've heard the song.
Yeah, I'm broken down watches and so much more. Man, there were so many questions that I had no answers for in my dad's bottom drawer. And it's true, man, because you couldn't ask him about it because, have you been going through my stuff? No. So you just used to look at him going, who was that chick? You know, where were those medals from? What war was that? You know, and, you know, it's just, you know, but they're cool stuff.
It's so good. And I know that you've got other songs where you just explored your content. You've done your research so much, and you care. I think that's what it is. You really care about the end product, and I think that this is not a negative remark, but I think that a lot of songwriters could do well in putting that much care into their craft.
No, I think there's a trap. I think even for us, there's a trap, man, because you want. Look, you want to express yourself and you love the thing, but you also want commercial success. You want your music to be able to get out there to a larger audience and to
Here's
a large
a question
degree.
For you.
Yeah.
If you were to advise a songwriter, so just say I was a songwriter, said, but I don't want to put that much into my song. It seems like too much hard work for me to...
Too personal.
Put that much effort, that much research and considering every detail. How can I still write a good song?
Just make a decision on the kind of artist you want to be. I know for a fact that you and I are going to know each other when we're 80. You know what I mean? And we're still going to be singing.
We'll still be terribly handsome.
Incredibly handsome. But because we're not writing for... We are writing to include others, but we're writing from a heart region, you know, and our...
Well, I've always said, you know, I want to be moved by my own art, and I would love if others were moved by it.
Yeah, exactly. And so you just go, well, that's our audience, and, you know, and you... There's audience members, you know, there's writers out there that will write, you know, incredibly good songs, but for a younger audience, and then, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, look at Miley Cyrus, you know, for an example, you know, she's grown, you know, and, you know,
is her audience going to... I sort of don't like looking so much now because I'm over the whole tongue thing.
The twerking.
At first, I was fascinated. Now I just, every time I...
Yeah,
although the twerking, I haven't even seen that since the big...
Yeah, but...
But every photograph I see where she's got her tongue halfway down her chin.
I really had a thing for Miley. I thought she was awesome. But, you know, I don't know, just pick your audience and just understand that what you're doing is something that you're going to be doing for a long time. So do you want a sugar hit?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want a nice kind of... journey. Mm. And I think that's exactly it. I think you make, there are particular songs which will stay hopefully around for a long time or will resonate with people, and there's songs, you know, and I've written these songs which are just fluff, you know, and you know, they're fun and they got a bit of instant kind of thing, but I think that's more damaging than good, you know what I mean?
Listening back and hearing the youngness in our writing from times gone by, is we can either cringe or just look at it as part of our journey. And what, you know,
yeah,
I look at your career.
I still cringe.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just the youngness, I guess, and how much we thought we knew. Even the what we thought was an honest approach back then. And you listen now, and I can tell that it's. Can't be sincere, because
yeah, it's really hard.
Maybe that's just relaxing as you get older, anyway. But what I was going to ask you was, what do you were there any sort of pivotal moments that's whereby your career was steered, your style of songwriting, and you the sort of there's definitely a change. We must have, in fact, I found a photograph a little while ago. We must have met in.
Club Acoustica days.
Yeah, 99. I think we were both on that compilation album from 99, from Live at the Basement.
Yeah.
And then I was working for Universal Music.
And
I was doing your... Yeah, I was lining up your interviews.
You were giving us nice big free posters. That would normally cut. Yeah. You were giving us some... You know, you were wonderful.
I used to look after my friends, that's for sure. You know, you're... The style of songwriting at the time... you've definitely taken much more of the storyteller's road now.
Absolutely.
Rather than sort of anthemic...
Well, I still like to rock. See, I came from a rock background, and we did all right as a rock band, but then we were signed to ABC, and they were a country label, and so we went, well, great, I'll tell my stories in country, you know, that's cool, I'll be happy to do that. So we brought in an element which I still... If you listen to any of my albums, it's still very much there. Even on this new one, there's nothing greater than having a strong rhythm section behind it to pound a song out. But if you also listen on those early albums, every second song is a story, you know. So it's always been, but when we say the single that you release, people just judge us straight away by these rockier singles that we put out. And they didn't look at... There was some beautifully crafted songs in those earlier albums that I'm very proud of, but...
Yeah, Telephone Lines is one of my favourites from those
early ones. Yeah, that was the very first album, you know, and Cigarettes for Sale was on that, and I really love that song. But the production, you know, was pretty lousy back in those early days. That's a bit I cringe about, you know. I'd love another go at so many of those past albums.
Wouldn't, be honest. You don't need to do it again.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I definitely would. Even the way I phrase words, you know, and... You know, it's...
That's what I'm talking about, that kind of thing. That delivery that at the time we would have thought was sincere.
Yeah.
You know, what was that? What were we attempting?
I think we were attempting to fit in, and that's what makes it... Mm. That's what makes us kind of cringe at it, maybe.
Mm.
It's wanting to please everybody all the time. And I think we get to a point where you just go, I'm not writing this to please anybody. I'm writing this because I have to get out of my chest and I have to write this message out there. And I don't know, I think we become a little bit more time poor as we get older, so that the time we do spend in crafting a song, it has to be of merit. You know,
That's a good point.
We certainly wrote a lot of songs just for the sake of writing songs in the early days, because we had time to just write songs for the sake of writing songs. Now with, you know, kids' mortgages, kind of rents, all that kind of other hoo-ha that goes on, we don't have that luxury.
Well, I'm looking outside at your Ferrari and I'm just wondering, you must have to do a lot to keep up the payments on that one.
It's the Maserati that's causing me the headaches, I tell you. But it's, yeah, you get it. So when we do it, it, I don't know, people are into crosswords, Sudoku, you know, boating, whatever. This is our craft, so we just go, I really enjoy that crafting aspect of it now, as opposed to the energy of it maybe in the early days where I was all about bashing it out there and whipping everybody up into a frenzy.
Yeah, a bit of a, you know, a secret yearning, or maybe not even secret, to be a bit of a rock star for a while.
Oh, I still want to be a rock star, don't get me wrong.
You're get well on your way, believe me.
But yeah, and this is the dilemma I actually now face, is because my body of work is so diverse, you know, where you go, I've got such songs which require you get up and you just boogaloo, you know, and you do bash it out there. Mm. But then you got the songs which I want you to not move. I want you to sit and absorb and just go, So I don't know. That's just me.
You are a co-writer as well.
Mm.
What do you think that you're... do you enjoy it? And what do you think you get from it, or what do you bring to it?
I've only done it about three times, and it's kind of funny
that, because there's a lot of people that you always hear about who are co-writing all over the place, and you and I have spoken about co-writing together for years, and I do write a lot.
Yeah, it's I just, as I think I mentioned to you before, I have those initials on my FO on my forehead, which I don't know who put them there, but no one ever approaches me and I says, excuse me, could you? It does happen, but I just go.
In your defense with that one, you know, my publishers have always put me on the trail of people, you know, if someone's looking to write for the next album, I'm on that trail, so they give me a call and ask for my availability. And then that turns into word of mouth.
Yeah.
So people are, I wrote yesterday with the Idol finalist and recent Telstra and Starmaker finalist.
I thought Paul McCartney.
Johnny awesome. Taylor.
Yesterday. That was a great one. I really like it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No trouble, it seems. Oh, Yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, I got you.
But so I did have a hand in that, but I didn't get credited on it.
He's a bugger.
Actually spent half an hour with Sir Paul McCartney one time. Believe it or not, back in London.
That's a good story.
He had a nicer car than yours.
I can imagine. I hope
he must. He must be doing all right. yeah, and then last night. So I wrote yesterday with the guy, like Johnny Taylor from WA, and then last night, someone else approached me and asked me if I want to write, because she knows that I write. I do a lot of co-writes, and it just happens like that. And maybe you're just not sort of known.
Yeah, well, I'm not known, but like, well. Yeah, maybe.
Everyone knows who you are, but yeah, it's they just don't know that you're on the trail as a co-writer as well.
Yeah, well, look, I've got to say, the girl on guitars up there are directly related to the co-writes. The first one, one thing I love to do is if we're playing with another muso, is in between the break, I say, you know, got any melodies? And, you know, and particularly with the driver's wife, you know, I'd long been wanting to express just how, you know, fascinated I was by the strength and the beauty of the Australian female, without being cliche and without being, you know,
smug.
Yeah. And so I just didn't know how to do it. And like that had been sitting there for a long time, but I knew Henry Lawson's The Drover's Wife, the poem, had best captured it for me. And when Pete played the start of this melody, it was only the start of the da 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 da. I just gone, hold the phone. Mm. You know, I just went, and I knew exactly where it was going. I came home from the gig. It was just a dodgy covers gig, and I came back here and sat where you're sitting right now, and it flowed out in about an hour and a half. You know, just it flowed out because I had the melody, and then I could progress the melody, and it was a period piece of music, and the melody allowed me to kind of put the feeling into a song.
It's interesting. So the catalyst, the spark, dictated the rest of the song purely from the mood of that.
That's right.
Melody.
And even with Lady of the Land, you know, Drew McAllister is a co-writer on that, but, you know, and he kind of has a hard time with it because he's saying, well, we actually didn't write much together. And it's true, we didn't. But what he did do was come over and I said, well, I've got this song, Lady of the Land, I've got the chorus. What I didn't have was all the pieces.
Mm.
So I said, so we sat on the lounge just over there and we said, let's get all the pieces together. So he went through the book and I went through it, read out lines, he wrote things down, he Googled some song titles and wrote them all down. And so, and that was it, that's the time that we had.
Right.
But then I had, but what I had in front of me now was the pieces that then craft the song. So getting all the pieces together is an integral part of building any song. You've got to have all your pieces before you can build your model. You know, so in that way, he's a co-writer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that isn't helping me get the parts together in order for me to craft the song is part of the songwriting process. So therefore, it's in essence a co-write, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. There are many ways a co-write can take place, and I'm a believer that sometimes it's the conversation that writes the song as much as the actual setting about finding your parts, because I've often been in situations in co-writes when we're just having a chat, but something my co-writing partner says is exactly what I needed to find to be able to shape that next line.
But even perfectly, even to be inspired to finish it, you know, like
that's
I just
another
go,
thing. It's motivational to work with other people.
Yeah, it's a discipline to write a song because you do have to see it through.
Mm.
You can, you know. I think most of us have about three songs that are maybe unfinished. You got a half a line there, but then you have to just go, right, I'm finishing this thing off.
Mm.
You know, because some songs can be bashed out in 5 minutes, some songs will take 5 years.
I tell you what, I've got hundreds of co-writes and there's only about three that are unfinished and it doesn't feel good.
Mm.
It still
wakes you up at night?
It doesn't. I need you to hand me those pills over there.
Mm.
It doesn't feel good. It's like when you've got a plan and you don't see it through.
Mm.
It feels so much better, even if it fails. At least you've seen it through.
Yeah, agreed.
And it's so good to, it's such a good feeling to finish these songs. When they're unfinished, you don't know what you're going to, oh, will I use these ideas somewhere else? Or do I go back to them? And,
and
do we keep trying to arrange to finish this song? And then, but that was then. Do we really want to write that again now?
Yeah.
We just got to...
I don't know. I think it should definitely always be the way that you love the last song that you wrote the most. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So you always have to have that benchmark where you go, well, I really like that last song. Mm-hmm. And for me to make the effort and to go and do this, it's got to be above that again.
That's a good place for us to wrap up. Last night, down at the Bunker Songwriter Sessions, about 4 weeks ago, I braved a new song, maybe a bit longer, and I tried it again in Tamworth. And there's a few things about this new song that I learned from those two experiences, giving it as a run, that I can't quite nail yet. And last night, I tried another brand new one, which is about 3 weeks old, the song, but it's the first time it's left my lounge room.
Mm-hmm. How'd it feel?
It felt really, really good. And, you know, I had...
You don't quite know until you perform it live, do you?
That's what I was about to say. I learned so much from it. There's only one little tweak that I noticed that's needed, and it's such a great process. And you know what was exciting? You know how many songs I've written? I've got, you know, five albums, and I can't even remember how many EPs, as well as all the other songs I write. I was still nervous last night. I was still excited about playing this song for the first time.
Mm.
And it was such a great process. How long do you keep your songs under wraps before you take them on stage and share them?
I think I'm a bit like you, mate. I think sometimes I put them out there even before they're finished. You know, it's just there's no better place to gauge immediately if a song's worth pursuing or if it's really worth kind of doing again than in a live scenario.
I think I'm going to do more of that.
Yeah,
I think I've been a bit cautious in my past.
Well, we've both been very fortunate with, you know, hosting songwriters in the rounds and, you know, all that kind of stuff there, where we do get a weekly opportunity to kind of do that, you know, in a format where we keep it exciting for ourselves. But, you know, that I often remind myself that life begins once you leave your comfort zone, you know, and we should always be challenging ourselves and putting ourselves outside that comfort factor.
I agree. Well, if we don't, then, you know, you don't want to have to think hard. At the end of your week, at the end of your day, when someone says, how's your day been, or what have you done today, or what have you done this week, you don't want to have to think hard and then come up with nothing. You want it to be memorable. And we can create memorable moments by doing things like that.
Yeah, it's. I agree. So, mate, yeah, I kind of enjoy the awkwardness and throwing it out there, and just, you know, there's also, in saying that, I deliberately don't write anymore, especially when I'm kind of getting to the end of an album, because I'm just recording an album now. And the last thing I need right now in my world is a brand new song that I'm highly passionate about.
I know that feeling.
Because you go, I've just finished the album and I want this song on it. So it's kind of, there's times for writing and there's times for resting. And
you're going to have to exercise patience, my friend. If you've got a new song now,
yeah,
forget it.
Exactly. So, you know,
Next album.
This song we write this afternoon, mate, like, you can have it. You know, I'm just... I don't want it on my album at the moment because, yeah, it just confused everything. So, and that's the other thing about songwriting is that you really want, if you're really proud of it, you've got to record it. And then when you record it, then you've got to do all the other stuff, which is exhausting, you know. And, but that's
and
all
exciting.
Part of the journey.
Exhausting and exciting. And,
exactly, yeah.
And revelatory.
Yeah, so it's all part of the big, beautiful game.
Now, I if not for your Australian accent, you're a beautifully spoken man, and I could listen to you all day. I'm sure listeners would agree, and I'm certain that you've provided a lot of value here for the listeners. Just before we go, though, I want to thank you, first of all, for sharing everything you've shared today. Where can we find you most easily online?
LukeOShea.com. Yeah, LukeOShea.com.
You're on Twitter and Facebook and...
Oh, look, I've tried to get into Twitter a little bit. I'm pretty bad at it, but I'm there, Luke O'Shea Music. And same with Facebook, Luke O'Shea Music.
It's all easy enough. I'll also put it in the show notes on the, and I'll put any links.
Yeah, and there's a very strong... series of songs and videos, etc., on YouTube. So Luke O'Shea is also, they can get an idea of all the kind of stuff that we do and a wide range of songs from those songwriters and round shows that we've done. So
yeah, we didn't get into that. Maybe the next time we can talk about that, because you and I have been on those providing a space for songwriters. It's great. In fact, my next guest may even be Tamara Stewart.
Oh, great.
And she's, you know, the three of us, we're the ones that have been providing that space in different ways, which is great. It's been a different sort of format. And so many talented people. Just
it's humbling, isn't it? Yeah. Holy moly. Yeah, yeah, so many great writers.
Well, thanks again, my friend. Congratulations again. I'm super proud of you.
Thank you, Carl.
And I meant it when I said that you're now, you know... You're not just someone who wins a golden guitar and then disappears. This is your third golden guitar. I meant it when I said you're in the history books now, mate. It's you're part of this,
yeah.
You know, this great nation's community and history of Australian country music.
Thanks,
it's
man.
It's amazing, and I'm really proud of you. Well done.
Good on you, my friend.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening, friends. What a great interview. I was right, wasn't I? What a beautiful man to speak to, and he shared so many insightful thoughts. So you can catch Luke at LukeOShea.com, on Twitter at Luke O'Shea Music, and Facebook at Luke O'Shea Music. And if you enjoyed the interview, if you enjoy this podcast, jump on over to iTunes and leave a review. It really helps the show get ranked. And if you'd like to leave any comments, even ask Luke some questions directly, I'll make sure he sees those. You can do that at the on this post on the blog. It's a podcast post, and just look for episode 12 and chuck a comment in there at the bottom, or ask Luke a question. It's insidesongwriting.com. Just flick to the categories on the right-hand side and click podcasts, and you'll find the episode. Thank you so much again for being here. I'm very grateful that you come here and listen. And as always, I really enjoy talking to you. All the best, friends. Stay safe out there.